Hello, and welcome to Power Pros Podcast, episode 101. I am your host, the Hoff, Chris Hoffman, and with me is this week's special guest co-host, CJ Chris Johnston.
It's fantastic to be back on Power Pros, Chris, and congratulations on 100 episodes.
Oh, why, thank you very much, and glad to have you joining me for this 101st episode. We are back, of course, to talk about what's going on in the world of Nintendo. We've got some game impressions, we've got a little bit of news, and this week's big topic is going to be video game crossovers. But before we get to that, let's start this episode by discussing one of the summer's biggest releases. Coming out in just a couple days as we're recording this is Splatoon 2 on the Nintendo Switch. And as we're gearing up for the actual release, just a couple of days ago, Nintendo had the Splatoon 2 Splatfest demo, pitting cake against ice cream. I did not get a chance to play the demo myself, unfortunately. I was out of town and on the road and just didn't have the opportunity to play it at that time. But CJ, you got to play it, right?
I sure did. Excellent. And I, of course, had to compete with when the sides are cake versus ice cream. I had to place my vote on the all-important ice cream side of that equation.
Ah, I see how it is. Now, I'm not going to say you made the wrong choice, but I am going to say that Nintendo really rigged this vote in ice cream's favor. They kept coming out on social media saying how they were pro ice cream. They said, oh, Reggie is pro ice cream. Our other execs are pro ice cream. Plus, this thing's like right in the middle of July.
That's right.
Right before National Ice Cream Day. So I feel like this was very unfair towards Team Cake. And I would have been on Team Cake if I'd actually... Well, I would have been on Team Pie.
Wow. Because
it was really a trick question. It should have been Team Pie. But I probably would have gone Team Cake, but I didn't play. Alas, I let Team Cake down. Pro Ice Cream won, but not by a lot.
That's right.
I think it was like 1 or 2% difference between the winners and the losers.
Well, yeah, because they do three different categories. So there's the popular vote, there's the solo wins, and team wins. Mm-hmm. And I think team wins was the one where it was like 2% difference. It was very close.
Mm-hmm. I mean, solo wins was pretty close as well, but not quite as close.
Yeah.
As the other category. On the other hand, the popular vote was way in favor of ice cream.
Indeed. 75%.
Yeah.
As it should be.
I don't know about that.
Even if it was the dead of winter, I would have gone ice cream.
Well, you enjoy your birthday ice cream and your wedding ice cream.
That's right. Yeah, but it was really a lot of fun. It was only 4 hours long on Saturday evening, and in the middle of it, I stepped out for dinner and ended up getting ice cream after dinner myself. I was so inspired by the Splatfest.
It's all a propaganda ploy.
That's right. They showed off 4 different stages, and they did the 2-hour stage rotation. So saw a couple of the new stages, Starfish main stage, Inkblot, Art Academy.
Pretty cool.
And then the return of Moray Towers.
All right.
With some improvements there. And the Humpback Pump Track. Mm-hmm. So a good mix of stages there.
Excellent.
And, of course, the usual outlay of weaponry, the Splatter Shot, the Splat Roller, the Charger, and the Dualies. Mm-hmm. So nothing new there.
What did you go with for your weapon?
I mainly either went Roller or Dualies.
Okay.
Depending on who I was playing with. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, it's of course still a lot of fun. I played entirely in handheld mode and with motion controls on because that's just the way that I like to play Splatoon.
Okay.
And it was a ton of fun. It was really, really great.
Excellent. Good to hear. Now, did you experience any issues with the fact that you don't have a second screen to rely on like you did with Splatoon on the Wii U?
I have gotten used to it.
Okay.
You know, they had the test fire earlier,
right,
and I was accidentally hitting the map button instead of jumping because I was just used to that from Splatoon 1. But at this point, I have gotten used to pressing the correct button, the X button for the map, and bringing it up in between the time where I've been killed and I'm waiting for a respawn. I'll bring up that map just to see if I should be jumping anywhere onto the stage to help out a teammate, or if there's an area of the map that we've lost, I'll do that basically while I'm waiting for the respawn. Usually not while I'm playing.
Okay, that makes sense.
But I do kind of miss that from Splatoon 1.
Yeah, it really seemed like the original game was designed with those two screens in mind.
Hmm.
So, you know, in a real competitive match, I was wondering how it would really play out. Like, you're really going to miss that? But it sounds like it's pretty easy to adapt to, so that's cool to hear.
It is easy to adapt to, and I when the first one came out, I did miss the option of playing off TV.
Ah.
So I am glad that now I can just pick up the Switch and play in handheld mode.
Yeah, that's a very good point as well. Did you have any connection problems or anything like that?
I didn't, but I saw on Twitter a lot of folks that were having connection problems. But for me, it was pretty steady, no lag at any of the 4 hours.
Excellent. That is good to hear. Going back to the stages you were playing, though, did you have a favorite out of those? Any exciting new features that you wanted to point out on any of the new levels?
Well, my favorite out of this was the Starfish main stage.
Okay.
I just like the theme of that stage a lot. The layout as well is fantastic. And Moray Towers, you know, is a returning map, and they have some new features there. Some of those, I don't know what the actual term is, but it's like those little lines that you can ink and then travel across.
Oh, yeah, basically paint rails or something like that.
Yeah, paint rails, exactly. So they had those set up in Moray Towers.
Nice.
It was pretty cool to be able to fast travel on those little lines there, but a lot of my teammates were not doing that, and we lost a lot on Moray Towers.
Well, as long as you're having fun, that's the important part.
Absolutely.
Now, of course, you were not able to use the new app for any matchmaking or anything because it really wasn't active yet, but it is out there. It's available for download. And, you know, from what I've heard, it sounds like there could be some issues with it.
Yeah, the big one being that the app has to stay active and your screen on your phone has to be on while you're using it in order to communicate with the other players. I think that is the major strike against it.
That does sound pretty questionable.
It is, especially when, you know, a smartphone these days can take Skype calls and have that play out in the background while you're doing other things. This has to be front and center the entire time. And of course, it's on your phone. You're going to get a text message or calls or have to deal with something else while you're playing, and you would have to leave the voice chat to take care of that.
I mean, if you're going to be playing the game, you're probably going to be mostly focused on your playing and your chatting anyway. So maybe in practice, it won't really be that much of an issue, but it really doesn't sound good on paper. And, you know, I guess we'll see how it really all plays out, you know, in a couple days once the full product is out there and we can all try it out for ourselves. But yeah, it doesn't sound like the best design, really.
Well, the good thing is that it is an app, and hopefully that they can iterate on it and fix some of these issues and improve it as we go forward. It is only compatible with Splatoon 2 for now.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure they'll be adding other games as we roll along here to the official rollout in 2018, where they're going to expect people to pay for it. So they really do need to work on improving.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Overall, though, you had a really good time with the Splatfest, right?
Sure did. Yeah, I love the Splatfest concept. When you go into Inkopolis Square and the place is all decked out and they have like special music for the Splatfest, it's always just a really great communal feeling of, this is an event. Like it's so different from any other shooters that I've played. It's just fantastic.
Very cool. There will be, of course, many more Splatfests in the months to come. They've promised 2 years of Splatfests, to be exact. So even though I missed that one, I will have many more opportunities down the road.
Yes, indeed.
Now, speaking of Splatoon, there's actually some other cool Splatoon news going on. One of those being that the Splatoon art book recently hit stores. You didn't pick this up by any chance, did you?
I sure did. In fact, I've had it pre-ordered for months.
All right.
That's well, how big excellent. Into Splatoon I am.
Well, I'm really glad to hear that because I went to the store and I saw it there and it looks fantastic. But I didn't actually buy it yet myself, and the copies I saw were shrink-wrapped. So tell me, what goodness am I missing out on?
It's got a lot of really nice promotional art, a lot of great art of all of the gear.
Cool.
Including all of the weapons and all of the clothing that you can get, all the characters. It has some early sketches of the Squid Sisters, Callie and Marie. Mm-hmm. It's just a really, really interesting book. It's got all the Tumblr posts that they did from the Squid Research Lab.
Oh, cool.
It's quite nice to have as sort of visual compendium of the original Splatoon. And at the end of the book, they do have a small section on Splatoon 2, but it really only includes the art that they showed off back in January and none of the new stuff.
Well, that makes sense.
Yeah.
That is excellent. I am really glad to hear that it's full of good stuff and that you like it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm a huge Splatoon fan, so of course I was going to get it. But I think, anyone who has interest in the art that team has put together, including things like, you know, the clothing lines and the logos mm-hmm. that are over everything, you get a really good look at all that stuff in this book. It's great.
All right. Very cool. Yeah, it's available now. You can purchase it off of Amazon or buy it at your local bookstore for $40 or less. And in addition to that, there's been some news about a Splatoon anime. Of course, there has been a manga that's been published in Japan for a while, and it's going to be coming out in North America fairly soon. And now it's been announced that there's going to be an anime based on this manga. It's going to be coming out on YouTube starting on August 12th. Now, that's going to be the Japanese version. I haven't heard anything about it being localized into English officially or otherwise. But that is definitely also very cool for Splatoon fans.
Yeah, I'm sure it's just a matter of time before we get some kind of announcement about an English version.
It seems very likely.
I think once you become an anime, that's when you've made it as a game series, right? Like, Splatoon is officially a hit.
Well, it's very hard to argue with that. Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, turning into a multimedia juggernaut. Games, books, cartoons, manga, all that good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, action figures as well. So, yeah, it's certainly made it, no doubt about it.
Yeah, I'm curious to see what kinds of storylines they have going. I have not read any of the manga, but...
No, me neither.
And I'm curious to see what the setting is. Is it Splatoon 1, or is it going to delve into any 2 years later Splatoon 2 stuff down the line?
Well, from what I've heard, the manga starts out focusing on the turf war mode of Splatoon 1.
Oh.
After that, starts getting into some of the story mode stuff. But what exactly the anime is going to be based on, I suppose we'll just have to wait and see.
I'll be watching.
Cool. Of course, that game comes out very, very soon. But then, the following week, we are going to get a new game coming out on Nintendo 3DS. And that is, hey, Pikmin! Sorry if it sounds like I'm yelling at the Pikmin, but that's how it's written with the exclamation point and all that. It's like, hey, Pikmin, get off of my lawn, or something like
that. It's like, hey, you, Pikachu.
Yes, I was thinking of that, too. How many other games can they start with, hey, and then a character with a P in their name?
That's right.
Hey, Princess Peach. So yes, that is coming out soon, and Nintendo has released a demo in the eShop. And I've been checking that out, played through the three stages that are available there. Have you checked it out as well, CJ?
I have, and actually, I was a little bit worried about it, because early impressions were not all that favorable.
Really?
Which I'm kind of surprised by after playing the demo, because I thought it was, even though it is not the Pikmin gameplay that we have come to know and love on the GameCube and the Wii U, I still thought it was very true to the series and really fun.
I agree. I thought it made the transition to a 2D side-scroller really, really well. I mean, I was kind of expecting something that was going to be a little bit more platformy, but it turns out that, you know, it's very puzzle-focused. It's very much in the same vein as the previous Pikmin games, just, you know, told from a different perspective. I also like the fact that it's really easy to grasp. You basically move Captain Olimar with either the circle pad or the control pad or even the buttons if you're a lefty, and then use the touchscreen to throw the Pikmin, use your jetpack, and do everything else. So it's just, you know, really, really intuitive, probably even more intuitive than the console Pikmin games.
Yeah, what do you think of the double screens and having some of the stage be on the second screen?
Well, I certainly thought it was interesting. I liked that you could, you know, sort of see stuff up there. It's like, oh, there's some Pikmin hiding in the top screen. That was fun and a clever way to hide things. I do think it was kind of a little bit arbitrary how sometimes you could get up to that area and sometimes it was not accessible to you.
Yep.
But other than that, you know, it's just, you know, more screen to have the gameplay on. So that worked for me. Did you have any thoughts about it?
No, I liked their implementation of it. I did find when moving left and right, there were some occasions where Olimar was right on the edge of that screen before it scrolled to the right or left.
That's true.
And I was just a little bit worried that there was going to be something on the other side of that I didn't like.
But there wasn't, though. The way they had the stages designed, there wasn't anything that would just jump out and get you in a situation like that.
That's true. It was not cheap in that way. That would have been really cheap.
Yeah, so as long as they keep it that way in the full game, I guess we won't have anything to worry about. But
True.
Yeah, I can understand why you were cautious there. In the full game, there will be all kinds of Pikmin. In this demo, we only had access to the Fire Pikmin and the Rock Pikmin. But in the full game, I'm looking forward to getting the Yellow Pikmin and the Blue Pikmin and the Flying Pikmin and everything else. And I guess if there is one complaint I had about the game, it is that in that third stage, the Crystal Caves, you know, there are a couple items that you'd want to collect, and it was really easy to mess up your playthrough and make it so you couldn't get them. You'd have to restart the level if you wanted to get those collectibles.
I know exactly which item you're talking about, and I also screwed that part up. I was like, I guess I won't be getting that.
Yeah, I wish you could just, you know, reverse time or go in a cave and make the platforms respawn or something, but that just felt cheap, because it wasn't until you got a little bit further that you're like, oh, that's what I was supposed to do. Well, yeah. Now I got to restart the level.
So I didn't restart it. I'll wait for the retail version.
I played through it a second time right away. I did it the first time missing items, then the second time 100%ing it. Plus, there are two-stage exits, so I felt compelled to replay it anyway.
That was a nice item that we both missed there. So people who have not played through the demo, and we're talking all Mysterioso about which item it is, you should play the demo and check that out. It's on the third stage.
Oh, and I was all getting ready to spoil it for everybody.
Don't spoil.
All right. I'll keep my big trap shut. But yeah, the game seems really solid. Good mix of action and puzzle elements. And I am definitely looking forward to the final release next week.
Yeah, me too. And, you know, the last couple months of demos that have come out for the 3DS, Ever Oasis, Miitopia, and this have gotten me to, you know, get my 3DS charged up and try these out. And I'm really excited for Pikmin after being such a fan of Pikmin 3. So I'm happy to see that Olimar is back and that the game, the demo was actually really fun. So I'm looking forward to loading up my 3DS again next week.
Yep, I totally agree. I have a small confession to make, and that's that I've never actually finished a single Pikmin game. Ooh. I always, you know, really like them and enjoy them. And I'm like, wow, I can't wait to sit down and just play through this entire game. And then for one reason or another, it just never seems to happen. So, you know, here's hoping that this time I can actually, you know, give it a full, complete, and thorough playthrough.
I certainly understand Pikmin 1 and 2. I didn't finish those either, but I did finish Pikmin 3. And I think part of that is because it had off-TV play.
Yeah, I don't really have a good excuse, but you know, it's a great series. And like I said, I'm looking forward to playing this one quite a bit more. Changing gears to an upcoming third-party release, just a few hours ago, as we record this, we heard some surprising news out of V-Blank Entertainment. They have announced that Retro City Rampage DX is on its way to Switch in just a couple of weeks. Retro City Rampage, of course, is the NES-style, top-down, Grand Theft Auto-inspired game that first came out on Wii and has now been on like more than a dozen different consoles. But yeah, now it is coming out on Switch. They promise it's going to have improved controls, improved targeting, and a couple other minor tweaks here and there. Have you played this one on other systems? You looking forward to this release?
I did play it on the Vita, and I really enjoyed it. I don't know that I'm going to buy it again, but I am looking forward to the next game that Brian is doing that comes out later this fall. Shakedown Hawaii, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's coming to Nintendo systems also, and I'm looking forward to that as well. But Retro City Rampage is actually another game that I never finished on my other systems. So, again, perhaps this will give me the chance. And it's kind of ironic that I haven't beat it before, considering that I was a hidden character, at least in the Wii version.
That's even more of a reason for you to actually finish it, so that you can say you finished the game that you're in.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, there's a secret code in there where you can play with my face, apparently.
Nice.
Yep, pretty crazy. So, yeah, they haven't given an exact release date, but as I said, sometime in the next few weeks is when they expect it to come out.
Awesome.
And then, for something completely different, we have also found out that there is, of all things, a vinyl record soundtrack coming soon of Konami's The Adventures of Bayou Billy from the NES. If someone had asked me, what video game merchandise do you think is going to be coming out in 2017? there's probably nothing that would have been lower on my list than Adventures of Bayou Billy soundtrack.
Does anybody really have a lot of nostalgia for the soundtrack from Bayou Billy? I don't know.
Well, I have to say,
enough to want it on vinyl, though?
I mean, as much crap as I will give this game, the music is actually pretty darn good. It's far and away the best aspect of this title. The music is actually very, very catchy in a lot of ways. No, I think you're right. It's not something that I would probably get on vinyl. I find it to be a very, very, very unusual choice. But I can't really complain about it. It just seems so bizarre and so odd that such a thing exists. I mean,
yeah, I never really got into Bayou Billy back in the day. It was always a game I kind of laughed at secretly. But
I was super excited about this game back in the day. I was looking forward to it so much. And it's, you know, one of the first games I got that I was really, really disappointed in. Because I love beat 'em ups and I was a huge Konami fan. And so seeing them make a beat 'em up that also has zapper shooter aspects and driving stages, I'm like, wow, how could it get any better than this? It's like if Konami made Double Dragon combined with all these other genres, it should be fantastic. But no, they managed to take all that stuff and put it together, and it was not the sum of its parts. It was very disappointing for me. Looks pretty good. And as I said, the music, very catchy, very good, but on the whole, I did not like that game. I was very sad when I actually plunked down $50 and got that. I'm like, wow, this did not live up to my expectations one bit.
Huh. Well, the cover of the soundtrack that you tweeted out definitely catches one's eye. It's a standout look for that.
Yeah, brand new art just for the album.
Do you own any video game vinyls?
Yes, I do. Only one. It is from the same folks at the Ship to Shore Phono Company that is publishing this one. It is the soundtrack to Konami's Snatcher, which is one of my all-time favorite games. Not available on Nintendo systems, sadly. It's on the Sega CD. But yeah, I'm such a huge fan of that game, I had to pick that one up.
Nice. And do you have a record player to play it on?
No.
Just for collector value, you have it.
Just for collector. And it's really great. I mean, the artwork on there is fantastic. It comes with just a couple art pinups, basically. And the image that's on the disc itself is fantastic. So if they give that same kind of treatment to the Bayou Billy soundtrack, that should be a pretty impressive package as well. Unfortunately, it will just be based on The Adventures of Bayou Billy and not Snatcher. So
yeah. The only one that I have is for Headlander, which is a game that came out in 2016 from Double Fine and Adult Swim Games. And I was the producer on that game. And I love the soundtrack. Love the game. Yeah, it came out for PS4, Xbox One, and PC. And yeah, that's the only video game vinyl that I own.
Nice. I've never played that one, but I've heard lots of great things.
Mm-hmm.
As for any Bayou Billy fans out there, this album should be up for pre-order at shiptoshoremedia.com in mid-August, and it will be selling for $15. This seems like a good place to take an intermission, so let's do that, and then when we come back, we will discuss this week's big topic, which is video game crossovers. All right, we are back, and we are ready to discuss this week's big topic, which is video game crossovers. CJ, I don't know about you, but I've been getting the feeling that video game crossovers have becoming more and more prominent recently. The one that sticks out mostly in my mind is the announcement we got just during E3 of Mario plus Rabbids Kingdom Battle. And that certainly isn't the only one that we've got. We just saw Blaster Master get crossover guest characters with Shantae and Shovel Knight. There's this new Blade Strangers game featuring Code of Princess and Cave Story and other game characters. We've got, you know, a Mighty No. 9 crossover with Azure Striker Gunvolt in their new release. So Video game crossovers are not as rare and elusive as they used to be, but when they're done right, they can be a whole lot of fun, in my opinion, and that's why we decided to make them the subject of this week's big topic. What do you think, generally speaking, of video game crossovers?
I totally agree, especially if there are two or more series that you really love to play separately, coming together. Mm-hmm. It's always fantastic. And for me, one of the most exciting crossovers that happened last gen was in Mario Kart 8, when we saw all of those other Nintendo series get put into one of the best kart racers ever.
Yeah.
I really love that Animal Crossing stage. Like, I think that bodes well for the future of the Mario Kart franchise, and hopefully we'll see more crossovers like that. I really just enjoy crossovers from that perspective, especially if it's two things that I really enjoy, or if it's something I really enjoy crossed with another series that I don't have a whole lot of knowledge about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think it's a lot like in comic books, crossovers happen, you know, pretty much every month, every issue, all the time. But it seems like a long time ago, you know, back when we were kids, it was kind of a unique thing. They're putting two characters together who have never met, and we're going to put these two things together and see how they interact and create a brand new situation that's new and different and exciting. And I kind of feel like that's the same appeal that happens when it's in video games.
Totally.
You know, obviously, in video games, it's a lot harder. You have to make an entire video game based on this concept. It's not just a one-off thing you can do in a month and then go back to your normal story. You know, you have to invest years to make this thing happen. So you have to make it good. You have to make sure it appeals to the audiences of both games, ideally, and not detract from either franchise. Make sure they both get good weight. So, yeah, for me, when they do it right, and it seems like they usually do, I think it does have just a ton of appeal and, gets me very interested and excited and seeing my favorite characters in brand new ways.
Yeah, I think the first one that I remember was Battletoads Double Dragon.
Yeah, yeah.
And
I do remember that one.
When I read about that in video game magazines, it was like, what? Why those? Like, that seems like such an odd pair up. But, I mean, they're both beat-em-ups, so that
they're both beat-em-ups, yeah. And, you know, they're both by Trade West, so...
Yes.
I guess that's why it happened. And that was kind of an example of it not really working out that well.
Mm.
I mean, the fighting styles of those two games didn't really mesh that well. So while it was interesting in concept, I don't think they pulled it off with quite the style that they could have. So, I kind of agree that was probably one of the first prominent ones. But yeah, I don't like to think about that one too terribly much. It is not a prime example of a great video game crossover. I definitely agree with you about Mario Kart 8, though. Loved seeing Link in there. Loved seeing the Animal Crossing characters. I love to see them do more with that. And, you know, I've talked about before how I'd love to see like a Super Metroid level where you're, you know, trying to escape the exploding planet on the last leg of the course or something like that.
I think that would be amazing. Really, really, you could hit a switch where you save the animals. I mean, it'd be perfect.
Yeah. Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, the next one, they just go, hey, it's just Super Smash Kart. We'll just throw all the Nintendo franchises in here. I mean, we already got Link and Animal Crossing and Donkey Kong and Mario, and we've got Captain Falcon's ship in there. So, you know, why the heck not? Why not just go all out? And we've already got one Mario Kart game on the Switch, and they usually don't do more than one on a platform. So maybe they can be like, okay, well, instead of doing Mario Kart 9, which I'd be perfectly happy to see, we'll just, you know, do something even crazier and bigger and wackier that, you know, goes beyond the Mario Kart brand.
I'd love to see that as well.
But of course, if we're talking about great video game crossovers, I think probably the obvious place to start would be Super Smash Brothers.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's sort of the end-all, be-all, especially when it comes to Nintendo systems, having all those folks in there at once, Mario and Link and Samus and Pikachu and Kirby and Donkey Kong, and, you know, then going even beyond that with all of the third-party characters they've added in over the years. Sonic and Mega Man and Cloud and whatnot.
Yeah, Solid Snake. Exactly.
Well, I've always been a Solid Snake fan, but in retrospect, that one was kind of weird.
Mm.
I won't complain if they ever wanted to bring him back.
Sure.
And I would definitely buy a Solid Snake Smash Brothers amiibo, but he does feel a little bit out of place. The codec conversations were awesome, of course, though.
Yes. And, of course, they'd need Shovel Knight in Smash Brothers at some point, right?
You know, at one point, I thought there was no way that he would get into that game. But that was back before the game had been released in Japan. Mm. And now, not only is it released in Japan, but Nintendo published it in Japan. So, if there's ever an indie character who could make it into Smash Brothers and would fit really, really well, it's definitely Shovel Knight. I think that would be...
And he's already got an amiibo. So, there you go.
Yes. Yes, he does. So, yeah, I definitely think that would be cool. But, I mean, for me, that's probably the most important part of that game series. I mean, I like, punching people and knocking them off the stage. But if this were just some generic cast of characters, I don't think it would have nearly the appeal that it would if you weren't playing as Link and Ness and Fox McCloud and Bayonetta and Pit and so on and so forth.
Yeah. I think you're right. And I think fighting games were kind of a unique genre in that they have a bunch of different crossovers, right? I mean, Street Fighter mm-hmm. and Tekken have crossed over. You had Fighters Mega Mix from Sega back in the day that took all of their fighting game franchises and put them into one thing. So, mm-hmm. yeah, Fighters have been a hotbed for crossovers.
Yeah, I feel like they've sort of been paving the way. I mean, one of my favorites, you know, goes back, you know, several years when they were doing the Street Fighter versus X-Men stuff, Street Fighter versus Marvel, Marvel versus Capcom, and then we got Capcom versus SNK, which was kind of a dream matchup for fighting game fans. Mm. And that even came out on GameCube. We got Capcom versus SNK 2, and that was a really, really excellent fighting game, as well as Tatsunoko versus Capcom on Wii. That is another one of my top fighting games from the last several years.
Totally.
And that one's kind of weird in that I didn't really know too many of the Tatsunoko characters, but, you know, the fact that they mashed up a whole bunch of different Capcom characters and they put in, you know, Street Fighter and Darkstalkers and Mega Man and Dead Rising characters and Rival Schools characters all into one game like that, that made it really, really fun. And, of course, the play mechanics were just so darn good that I still wanted to play as these anime characters, even though I had to educate myself as to who they all were.
Totally.
But, yeah, Capcom's done a really great job with that over the years.
And don't forget Soul Calibur 2, where we had on the GameCube Link.
Oh, that's true. Yep. Yes, indeed. Yeah.
That's the reason anybody bought that game on GameCube, right?
Well, it's certainly one of the reasons why they bought over other systems versions. I mean, that had to be the best version. I mean, did you want to play as... Was Spawn in the other one?
Spawn. Yeah, exactly. No thanks.
Yeah, Link, definitely way cooler. I would definitely get that game on GameCube over the other systems.
Mm-hmm.
And what did PlayStation get? Did they get Heihachi?
I don't remember exactly, but it was one of those.
Spawn was Xbox and Heihachi was PlayStation.
I think you're right. Like that. Yeah, something like that.
But yeah, the GameCube definitely got the best deal in that case.
For sure.
Are there any other crossover video games that really have stood out to you?
I can't believe we haven't mentioned Sonic and Mario at the Olympics.
I mean, it is like the classic crossover that everybody wanted, but is that really the way that anybody wanted it?
No.
Not for me, no.
I don't think so. You know, outside of the fighting games and Mario Kart, I can't really even remember enjoying too many crossovers.
Well, there are a few that I have really enjoyed. You know, one day I'm hoping that they'll do a real Sonic and Mario game and have some sort of, you know, platformer. And, you know, hopefully they could do it where each character still retains his own distinct levels and style. You can't just shoehorn Sonic into a Mario level or Mario into a Sonic level and make it feel good. But I think there are other ways to do it. So we're still waiting for that one.
You could give Mario the Sonic, the red high tops. Give him those shoes and he'll be able to run fast, right?
Well, at one point in the game, you know that would happen.
Oh, so of course.
That, I mean, maybe it's not until, you know, the 12th level or something like that. But yeah, that's the kind of thing that you can only get out of a crossover. And that would be like, you know, the holy snap moment when that happens. You'd be like, oh, it's happening. This thing just got real.
That's right.
Mario put on the shoes. Well, you've got it halfway written right there.
Mm-hmm. And then Sonic gets the Mario cap for the other portion. Yeah.
Maybe Mario just throws his cap at Sonic and then controls him for the rest of the game. Maybe that's how it happens.
There you go.
But sorry, I got distracted there. I was trying to talk about my other non-fighting game favorite crossovers. One of them would be the Project X Zone games. I guess it's actually supposed to be pronounced Project Cross Zone.
Yeah.
And that is a turn-based strategy game that has Namco, Sega, and Capcom characters just sort of mixing them up without really any good rhyme or reason. But it's fun to see them interact. The writing is really excellent in that game. And, you know, for some reason, suddenly you've got, you know, Yakuza characters going in the underworld to fight the Darkstalkers. And it's ridiculous and it makes no sense, but it's a whole lot of fun.
Why not?
Yeah, I mean, they give a very flimsy reason for it happening, but that's reason enough, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. And then another one that is one of my personal favorites is Professor Layton versus Ace Attorney. I'm a huge fan of both series, so to me, it just made a whole lot of sense for these two to team up. They both break out of genre conventions, they're both thinkers rather than fighters, and they both use their brain power to overcome these situations and puzzles and solve mysteries. So as a fan of both series, I thought it was a lot of fun to see them interacting and matching wits. And sure, the story was ridiculously over the top, even more so than usual, but I enjoyed it regardless. I suppose when we're talking about crossovers, we should also mention Kingdom Hearts as well. I mean, that's mostly Disney stuff crossing over with other Disney stuff and then the Square stuff. But it's a whole bunch of different Square properties. I especially like the fact that in Kingdom Hearts on the 3DS, it included characters from The World Ends With You.
Huh.
So it had those characters in there. It had the original Kingdom Hearts characters. I think there were still Final Fantasy characters in there. And, of course, all the Disney stuff. That series also gets very crazy and the story becomes utter nonsense. But it's still a whole lot of fun seeing those characters all mix it up. And
you That's know. Right. Yeah, the fun of that game is really exploring the Disney worlds and the Square characters that you interact with. Yeah.
Yep, absolutely. Now tell me, if Nintendo was to do some sort of ARMS crossover to add some additional characters to that game that come from other series, who would you like to see added in?
Well, I would like to see the cast of Punch-Out added to ARMS. I think Little Mac, you could put long arms on him, and that could be pretty interesting. Or it could even, you could do it with by skinning the existing characters in a Punch-Out themed clothing or colors, I think, would work just as well. But I would really like to see that happen as a fan.
Yeah, that was certainly the first one on my list as well. Mm. You know, it just seems like such an obvious thing to do, get Little Mac or some of the other guys in there. When I was playing the game, I noticed that Biff, the commentator, was sometimes sort of giving you advice on how to approach the fights. And I was just kind of thinking, oh man, this would make so much sense if Doc Lewis were here offering me some tips like he does in Punch-Out.
Completely.
Obviously, that would make even more sense if you're able to get Little Mac in there.
And you could have Master Mummy do like a King Hippo dance or a bear hugger type of thing going on. It'd be great.
Totally. In addition to Punch-Out characters, though, I think would also make a lot of sense if they teamed up with Capcom and brought Dhalsim over into the game.
Oh, absolutely. That would be a fun one.
I mean, he is the original stretchy-armed fighter, so it almost seems like a disservice to not have him in the game. So, Nintendo, yeah. Capcom, if you're listening, please make it so.
What about Luffy from One Piece? He's got the stretchy arms.
I'm always wary of those anime crossovers. You know, there's that whole contingent that really wants to see Goku in Smash Brothers.
Oh, right.
But, so I'm afraid that would just open a big door that couldn't be closed. So that's not a bad idea, but
you could really go old school of the consequences. And do Plastic Man and Stretch Armstrong. Good, very U.S.-centric nostalgia.
Yeah. The other one that they could do from Capcom is the original Spring Man, who was a boss character in Mega Man 7. So I feel like maybe he should come in, and then we'd have some Spring Man versus Spring Man to see who is the real, true owner of that name.
I
think it's only fair.
That is.
But aside from these guest characters in ARMS, if we're talking about fantasy game crossovers, what are some other combinations that you'd like to see?
All right, well, when you first mentioned the idea of crossovers to me, I was driving home in the car, and I thought, Professor Layton Clue. like the Clue the board game, and have it Layton-themed Clue game could be interesting.
It could be.
Yeah.
You know, I've actually seen they've been doing a bunch of themed Clue board games in real life. I forget, you know, what licenses they're doing, but I have seen stuff like that. So it's totally
possible.
Makes sense. Yeah, it's totally plausible that something like this could happen.
Yeah, and I did Google it just to see if it had happened.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody on DeviantArt had put together a Professor Layton Cluedo board. Cluedo, of course, is the French version, I think, of Clue.
Okay.
And yeah, they had a whole board set up. It was really interesting looking. So, makes sense. I'm not the only one who thinks so. There's at least one other person.
Yeah, I could totally see that.
Mm-hmm.
For me, thinking about crossovers, the first one that I would like to see happen would be Castlevania crossed with Shantae. And the thing I like about that is, you know, sort of the juxtaposition of, you know, Castlevania is kind of, you know, serious, and Shantae is kind of goofy. I kind of like the idea of, you know, Shantae interacting with the Belmonts, just having their two very different approaches to heroism. But way forward, you know, they make a great Metroid-style adventure game. So, you know, with them at the helm, making a non-linear, you know, Castlevania title in the vein of the DS and GBA titles, and then mixing that up with Shantae, I think would be a whole lot of fun.
Yeah, I agree. Those two would be an interesting mix. And yeah, I like the juxtaposition of cute and goofy versus gothic and brooding. Could be interesting.
Yeah, I think it would be. What else you got?
Well, of course, I went old school and thought of one of the original fighting game crossovers that never happened. But you never know, it could totally happen.
I think I know what you're going to say.
Mortal Kombat versus Street Fighter.
I know, right? Like, how has that not happened?
I know.
Like we were saying earlier, they have had so many Capcom fighting game crossovers, but the one people have always wanted to see, I feel, you know, for the past 20-something years, is Street Fighter versus Mortal Kombat.
Yeah, and I think... I mean, I would prefer if it was the old school 2D style, but I would accept a 3D version as well. I think it could be a really, really fun game. And I mean, Mortal Kombat has stood the test of time just as much as Street Fighter has. And I think
That last game was very highly lauded.
Yeah, I think it is well past time for that crossover to happen. I mean, they've, like we were saying, they've done everything else, almost everything else.
Yep. And they were able to do the Mortal Kombat DC Universe crossover. And I think in that one, they toned down the violence a little bit. So you weren't like ripping out Superman's spine. So, you know, if that was the issue with the Street Fighter crossover, I think they could probably deal with that in a similar fashion.
Or they could always just use Street Fighter the movie and have Jean-Claude Van Damme take the punch, take the fatality.
Sure. Yeah, we'll just go back to those... old school digitized graphics and have Carlos Blanca in there duking it out with, oh man, who played Raiden in the Mortal Kombat movie?
I can't remember.
But yes, we can only hope that that is the way they would go. That would be amazing. One that I would like to see, though, is another obvious crossover that for the life of me, I cannot figure out why it hasn't happened. Especially since the same publisher owns the rights to both series, and that is Final Fantasy combined with Dragon Quest.
That's a really good one, and yeah, why hasn't that happened?
I mean, they've owned both franchises for quite a number of years, and I think it's something that fans would really, really be into. I mean, obviously they've diverged a lot, you know, Final Fantasy is the more modern thing, Dragon Quest tends to be more of a throwback, but whether they went really old school or they went, you know, super modern, I think they could definitely do something bringing in various, you know, characters from various games. I mean, you have your Slime, your Moogle, your Chocobo. I mean, that right there, you know, I think would get any longtime RPG fans' blood flowing.
Totally. Do you think the art styles would be too much of a clash?
Well, I mean, the Final Fantasy art style kind of changes a lot. So I think they could do something that would be a good match for Dragon Quest. I don't think that's out of the question. I mean, we've got, you know, some super serious Final Fantasy, but then we've got, you know, these chibi-fied Final Fantasy characters that have appeared in some games like Theater Rhythm. So I'm sure they could find some sort of happy medium that would work well for both franchises.
That's true. I wonder if they could do something like Dragon Quest Heroes, you know, where oftentimes those kind of Musou mashups for Hyrule Warriors and the Fire Emblem stuff kind of mixes timelines and all that. It seems to be pretty easy to do it within that sort of a space. Maybe they'll do it there.
I suppose so, but I think I would be disappointed for anything other than a classic-style turn-based RPG. I mean, yeah. I would take the Musou game, I suppose, but you know, I'd like to see somehow those worlds colliding in a traditional RPG fashion, since that's what those franchises are known for.
Yeah, I'm with you.
So
I'm with you.
Do it, Square Enix. I mean, heck, they mashed up the two companies years ago. Time to mash up those franchises.
Yes.
But speaking of worlds collide, I was also thinking, you know, how about an actual Mega Man combined with Sonic video game? We've seen it done a couple of times in the late lamented comic books, and it worked surprisingly well. So that made me think it would be really cool to see a Mega Man and Sonic combination video game.
Yeah, that'd be really interesting. One of the first, I remember when Capcom first started developing games for the Genesis, there's an image of Mega Man and Sonic shaking hands. That
oh yeah, I remember that one. Mega Man looks kind of creepy.
Yeah, he does. And it was on a notepad, actually, that they sent out to press as well.
Nice.
It's just kind of become an iconic image. But yeah, I think it totally makes sense. The Blue Bomber and Sonic.
Oh, the Blue Bomber and the Blue Blur. Yeah.
That's right.
And the way the comic book did it was really cool. The way, because both of them, they fight mad scientists. And they both deal with robots. You know, Robotnik tends to turn little innocent critters into the robots. And, you know, Dr. Wily just builds them from scratch. But the fact that they come from such similar backgrounds, so to speak, I think does make it a really good match for the pairing of Sonic and Mega Man. Of course, there is the issue of how the gameplay would work, but I think if you let the characters retain their signature gameplay, give them their own unique sets of levels, but then have Sonic levels with, say, a Mega Man aesthetic and Mega Man levels with a Sonic aesthetic, that could be really, really fun. Another thing the comics did was turn Sonic's allies into the Robot Master bosses like Tails Man and Knuckles Man, and that could work really well in a game too.
I agree. I think that would work really well.
You got anything else?
Yes, I do.
All right.
I'm going to take two of my favorite music games on Nintendo systems, and that would be Rhythm Heaven and Elite Beat Agents.
Ooh.
And, you know, I think there might be something there.
I think there might be, too.
Some of those combined stages at the end of the most recent one, the deluxe pack, you know, you could mix that in with an Uendon stage, and I think it would be a lot of fun to play.
Well, it really feels to me like, you know, Elite Beat Agents is probably never going to have another chance at coming back.
True.
On its own. So, you know, if they're able to, you know, somehow put them in there with Rhythm Heaven, I think that would be pretty darn amazing. That would be a great way to reintroduce Rhythm fans to a game that was, you know, really very much overlooked. So I love that idea in that regard.
Use some licensed music in the process.
I
would buy the heck out of that game.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be really cool. I really like that idea. Another one that I would really love to see Nintendo bring to fruition is a Metroid crossover. I think there could be a lot of potential either with a crossover with Kid Icarus, because, you know, I think a lot of people like the idea of, you know, we have, you know, Pit in his fantasy world, we have Samus in futuristic sci-fi, and being able to, you know, maybe swap those, have them, you know, go to these worlds that they aren't quite familiar with. I think that could be really cool. And, and those two games, of course, have always been sort of connected to each other since they were both released on the NES in that silver packaging in the Adventure series. So it just always sort of seemed like they've had a connection like that. I also think that combining Metroid with Star Fox would have the opportunity to be really, really cool. I mean, they're both set in space. They're both intergalactic. Are they mercenaries or are they officially on the payroll? I don't know, but it seems like they would have plenty of opportunity to cross paths with Samus. And I think that could bring an interesting dynamic where maybe you're flying to different planets and you do that, you know, sort of Star Fox style. But then when you're on the planet, you'd be able to swap in different characters to use different abilities. I mean, we've seen Fox out of his ship before with varying results. But I think if you did it this way, so you've also got Samus in there too, I think that would be another opportunity to make something really interesting out of, you know, Fox, even when he's not in the ship.
Yeah, you know, I never thought about those two series coming together, but that could be really interesting. Yeah,
I think there's some potential there. Anything else on your most wanted list?
Well, the last one that I thought of was Pikmin and Odama, the GameCube sort of pinball army game.
Yes.
That's experimental game.
Mm-hmm.
Taking these,
a bit of an obscure one.
Yes, these really two kind of experimental games and crossing them together, I think could be interesting, maybe.
It just sounds so brutal to me. All I'm imagining is Pikmin being murdered left and right by this giant stone ball.
Exactly.
I mean, the horror.
That sound that the Pikmin make when they go off to the spirit world. Yeah.
Go off to Pikmin heaven, yeah. Yeah, I could just see, you know, hundreds or thousands of them being crushed all at once by this giant ball. It's horrifying.
And sometimes that happens in Pikmin 3, and maybe the memories of that is where I came up with this. But I thought that could be a seriously weird crossover and will likely never happen. But I'd like to see something as experimental as Odama's gameplay come back, and it could be fun to have a little Pikmin theme in there, too.
Sure. Why not?
Yeah.
Just be sure to say a little prayer for the Pikmin before they get thrown out under the mercies of the giant murderous ball of death.
That's right.
The other one on my list is another Ace Attorney crossover. And I still feel like Ace Attorney is kind of a bit of a niche series. It deserves a wider audience. And I think a great way to do that would be to have Ace Attorney crossover with other Capcom series. So instead of, you know, just defending some random person who didn't commit a murder, maybe suddenly you're having to defend Dmitry Maximov from Darkstalkers to prove, oh, he's not the one who sucked the blood out of that person. It was somebody else. Or, you know, maybe you're defending Akuma from some crime, or Chris Redfield, maybe. And I mean, they're pretty much, you know, unlimited combinations they could do with all of these characters. But I think it could be really fun and humorous and entertaining. And again, would be an excellent way to introduce more people to the Ace Attorney universe.
Yeah, I love that. That'd be fun to even just do it as like a mini game on the web, or like as a promotional thing for an upcoming Ace Attorney game. It'd be a fun little demo type thing. I like it.
Yeah, I think it'd be pretty hilarious. Mm. And the thing that actually gave me this idea was that Capcom did a Harvey Birdman game several years ago.
Yes, they
did. And there were a couple of Capcom cameo appearances in that one. I remember this really disturbing image of Guile being in there and someone like constantly rubbing his pectoral muscles that will haunt me for the rest of my days. So I'm like, well, if they can put, you know, Guile in a Harvey Birdman game, surely they can put other Capcom characters into Phoenix Wright games.
I would think definitely, yeah.
Yeah, I think that would be fun. Oh, and one last one I wanted to mention from Capcom Crossover Land is that there was an official Street Fighter X Mega Man game a few years ago that came out only on PC. And man, I would love for that to get an official release on console or handheld. I would pay you know, a decent amount to get that on 3DS or Switch. Doesn't seem very likely to happen, but I would love it personally. That's pretty much all I had for this crossover video game discussion. Is there anything else you wanted to add, CJ, before we wrap this up?
Not at all. I got nothing. But I will say, I want to play all of these crossovers that we've mentioned.
Yes.
That'd
yes.
be great. Any game companies that are listening should get on this.
Yeah, I don't really expect a whole lot of these to happen, but I think those would all be a whole lot of fun. So hopefully, you know, something or something like it comes to fruition, because I think that would be really cool, and I think the fans would be all over it.
Especially the arms and punch out stuff. Let's be real.
Yeah, let's do it, Nintendo. All right, I think that does it for this week's episode. But before we go, I think we've got time for one more thing. And that is a dramatic reading. This time from the back of the box of the NES game Burai Fighter. Defeat the Burai using massive weaponry. In a remote corner of the galaxy, there lives a race of super brains known as the Burai. For thousands of years, their vast mental capabilities have been focused upon one goal, the conquest of the universe. To accomplish this, they are creating huge armies of robo-mutants, bizarre creatures, half-robot and half-living flesh. With their 7 manufacturing bases producing thousands of robo-mutants each day, the Burai armies will soon overrun the galaxy, unless you can stop them. Strap on your proton pack, charge up your laser cannon, and prepare to do battle with the deadliest army of mutant rogues in the universe. You must somehow penetrate the 7 bases of the Burai, where you will confront a super mutant guarding each base. Monstrous creatures like the Gigantacrab, Jawsipede, and Fang Skull, until finally you face the terrifying Slime Dragon. But with the awesome arsenal of weapons at your command, victory may still be within your reach. It's up to you to rid the universe of the evil Burai once and for all.
I think Gigantacrab needs his own game.
I would definitely buy a game called Gigantacrab.
What was the other one? Jawsipede?
Yes. In fact, that could be its own game crossover. You got Gigantacrab. I've already confused myself. Gigantacrab versus Jawsipede.
Yes.
Let's find whoever owns the rights to old Taxan IP, and that'll be the first gaming crossover that we produce. Yeah, I've never played that game, but I have to say, I feel a little bad just because they're telling us, I mean, it's just like a bunch of brains. It's super brains. Yeah. They're very smart, and I feel bad that we're just going to go out and kill them all.
We got robo-mutants and proton packs.
Yeah, I mean, when they're sending Jawsipedes after us, I guess what can you do? But, you know,
true.
Still feel a little bad about it. Anyway, that does it for this week. As always, you can find us at powerpros.podbean.com, and you can follow us at PowerProsPod on both Facebook and Twitter. You can follow me, The Hoff, on Twitter at Chris The Hoff, and you can find CJ at SuperPack. You can email us at powerprospod@gmail.com, and if you like the podcast, it would be great if you would tell your friends about us. CJ, thanks for joining me this week, and to all of our listeners, thanks for tuning in. For myself, Chris Johnston,
stay fresh,
and our long-lost love child, Ludwig von Koopa,
oh, yeah!
We will see you next time.